welcome to the Crossbox Podcast. This is the May 2017 edition. I am your host, Jay, and across from me in the studio, as always, is your co-host, John. Tonight's show is no ordinary show. We're skipping the news, we're skipping positivity, and in fact, we're skipping everything except for games, because tonight we have a games-related guest. With us is Dave Williams, co-founder of Jellyfish Games and designer of their upcoming release, Astro Base Command. Dave's agreed to come on the show and answer a few questions for us about said game, so we're going to dive right in. So, Dave, for our listeners who are not familiar with the concept of that underlies Astro Base Command, why don't you give us the quick elevator pitch?
Okay, so Astro Base Command is a game where the player builds a station in space and fills it with people who he assigns to job to manage the station, or it all blows up based on their deep personalities that they have.
Cool. All right. So how did where'd you get the idea for Astro Base Command? Because it sounds like some other games I've played, but not really any one game in particular.
Well, there's a lot of sources for ideas that you have. So for me, I guess set expectations that things should always get better. Throughout my life, you know, I guess games would be Star Control 2, XCOM 2, Terror from the Deep, and then the reboot, really like random space games. Fallout 2 is another one that I felt like really pulled me into it. I guess that's enough.
Sure.
Gold Box. The Gold Box was something that I loved.
Yeah.
What's interesting about making a game that is a personality system is that the influences and inspiration comes from everyday life. So if something happens to you during the day, and you think about that in terms of the personality system that you're making. And it's a pretty neat thing because then you can start both validating the system by trying to apply real life through its lens and also kind of putting parameters into it, because the point is that it's a complete human experience with everything that humans have happened to them throughout the day. So if something happens to you, you're like, well, how is this expressed in the system? And then kind of incorporating those things into it. So it really is a reflection of, you know, how the world works around you. And, you know, that's true for the characters in the game, that the world definitely, you know, all plugs into their personality and all works around their personality.
So there's one of the common factors of those games you talked about is a kind of sense of place, pulling you into a world. And do you have anything further to say on that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that used to be the case with games is that they were made as like a labor of love. Someone had a vision and made a game about an idea for them. And that idea was totally new, like nobody had that idea before. There are so many games that my memory has from childhood where like I had never even seen that genre before. And like I had never seen any game do that before. And there was a period where like you would play a game and it would just be like totally different. And then you play another game and it would be like another totally different thing. So an example would be like Warcraft 1. Or Command and Conquer, or you know, Wolfenstein, the first Wolfenstein, not the one for the Apple, but the one for the PC, where it was like a 3D space. There was Doom, right? So all of these were like, everything was like an innovation in these games, and they weren't necessarily polished in all their features, but they captured something that stuck with you, and I think that's been lost in the industry in general. And it's something that we're trying to capture as a company, that, you know, we make games that come from kind of that place where ideas come from. And it isn't just a list of features that have been cherry picked from other things that you play. Obviously, you know, you draw from experiences that you have in life. So kind of, you know, everything good and bad piled up in my mind to create this game. It's hard to point to one or two specific influences other than, you know, my childhood favorites or, you know, favorites that I've had recently. So I guess that's an answer.
Yeah,
I hope that's an answer.
That word, that totally works. And actually, there's kind of a follow up that I want to jump into here, because this ties into our next question. But the whole game has this really interesting aesthetic to it. And Jay and I were talking, and I think I described it as not quite Star Trek: The Original Series, and not quite Star Wars, and not quite Star Trek: the original, like, William Shatner movies. It's this somewhere in between, like, kind of late 60s, early 70s vibe to it. It's really cool. And did you have any aesthetic inspiration for that, or did it just kind of, like, shake out in the design meetings and say, yeah, this looks cool, let's go with it?
So, should preface this answer by saying that our artist and other co-founder, Daniel, is completely, like, responsible for all of this, and it's all of his work.
Of course, of course.
So that being said, for me personally, the idea was that what we think of now as kind of futurism, like when you watch a movie,
yeah,
and you see what their vision of the future is.
The future is blue.
Yeah, pretty much, and glass.
Trajectory, and that trajectory takes into account kind of all of the history of Earth. So, for example, there was a PC revolution, and there was an internet revolution, and there was a device revolution. And all of these things kind of inform, like, that blue direction, if you will. For us, we try to avoid what we call Earthisms, because we're making a game where the player can make whatever species he wants, right? The player has a species creation that's quite in depth, because it's about playing your fantasy, not about playing our fantasy. So we wanted to make kind of an aesthetic that captured the idea of what would technology look like, kind of absent the random historical influences of Earth, like the fact that Silicon Valley happened to be the place where a lot of the computer innovations occurred in the 20th century, and like the aesthetics of the time, and, you know, the happen on Earth to make technology looks the way it looks. So kind of removing that from the equation, like what's left, and also going back to the 60s and 70s, because that was really the time where all of the ideas were in play at the same time. And the winner hadn't been chosen yet.
Okay.
So that was kind of the reason, that was the inspiration.
All right, cool.
That does bring us on to the next question about one of the main features of the gameplay videos that you guys have shared on Kickstarter, and that's the desk. That lovely big desk with the inbox and outbox and the little PDA you plug data cartridges into. Tell us more about that and how it came to be, and the kind of the gameplay implications thereof.
Yeah, so the desk was originally conceived of in the first Kickstarter in 2013. And in that version, it was a 2D deal. The idea behind it was to immerse the player completely in the game world, so that the GUI didn't, so the player wasn't playing the GUI, so the player was actually playing the game, and really to draw the player in to be fully immersed within the game world. Because a really crucial question, I think, of every game is, what is the player's relationship to the game? And that really should inform what the GUI looks like. Most games don't pay it much attention, so you get essentially stock windows or stock console. The white kind of bars with the gray shaded background. And, you know, we felt like that in order to really immerse the player into the game world, he should be the same as kind of any character in the game. So the player plays the game by, you know, manipulating objects on the desk, because that's his interface into the world, the same way in which in your life, your interface into your job is your computer, your phone, the things on your desk, the things in your world. You don't have some magic GUI that floats in front of your face. You know, maybe in 20 years, that's what it'll be. But in Astrobase Command, you know, the role of the player is a person who is an administrator or a bureaucrat on the station, who has a role within the game world, just like any other character has a role within the game world. And the tools that the player has to use are the tools that they would expect this job to have, which are the instruments on the desk, the data pad, you know, the inbox, he'll get papers in and he'll need to stamp them. There's a filing cabinet, there's his electronic device where he can like build modules, he can promote crew, he can interact with the station the same way in which if you go to your job, you have, you know, apps or programs that interact with whatever it is that your job has to do. So that was the idea behind it, to make the player not be this kind of this omnipotent, disconnected entity that really isn't part of the game, but to make the player genuinely in the game world in a very real and tangible sense.
All right, cool. Let's poke at that game world a little bit. So we've talked a bit, and we'll talk more about personality simulation, but I want to digress briefly and talk kind of a bit about the world at large. So is the station envisioned to be kind of a quiet backwater, or is this going to be more like a Deep Space Nine, Babylon 5 place where all kinds of things are going to come in and go out and have away missions or whatever, and all kinds of externalities come in? Or are we going to see more of an internally focused, don't blow up the station kind of game?
Yeah, the answer to that is entirely dependent on funding and development schedule. So currently, the game is an isolated station that's kind of like an internal ecosystem where you have resources coming in, and then everything on the station is a closed system. Obviously, the core of the personality system is such that it's absolutely in the design to have, you know, visitors and alien races and AI, and you know it can scale as big as it can be. But the limiting factor on that scale, of course, is the realities of resources in a development environment. And the most interesting part of the game, to me, is the personalities of it, which is entirely playable just as an isolated station. Like, that is a cool, fun experience. And everything else are things that we would love to do, but that's why we're having a Kickstarter, right? That's why we're having this conversation. And, you know, why things are, you know, where they are on the development pipeline.
So you mentioned resources, and I think there's also something like a little internal ecosystem. And that's fascinating to us, both of us being logistics nerds, it's fair to say.
Are we ever.
So tell us a little bit about what there is to building a station that can sustain itself.
Yeah, so the fundamentals of it is really going down to the resource level. And the idea behind resources is that they have physical properties that have to be paid attention to. And the gameplay needs to emerge from the physical properties of the resources, right? You know, what makes a piece of iron a piece of iron, and you know, a piece of plastic a piece of plastic? It's not, or it shouldn't be. Somewhere said, well, you know, iron is used for object number 237, plastic is used for object number 239, and then we'll name them things that make that make sense. And then, in fact, again, it's really just about, you know, balancing some numbers. So for us, because everything in Astrobase Command is emergent gameplay, we wanted the game to emerge out of the properties of resources. Yeah, there are 27 resources, of which 21 are more in use than the others. There's really the way to look at it is that there's 20 resources, and then there's one dark matter resource. And the dark matter resource has a specific mechanic that really means it's 7 resources. But of the 20 resources that we're talking about, you know, there's a group that's organics, there's a group that's and I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me. There's like basic resources, there's organic resources, there's industrial resources, and there's exotic resources. Those are the four of them. And then each of the four groups are used for gameplay reasons, right? Like you would want organics to be used in organic things. I mean, that's more of the traditional where, you know, it's really the designer that's saying, you know, you eat food because food is a thing that you eat. But in addition to that layer underneath the hood of the resources, they all have different properties. So for example, you know, food has a perishable property. Other things have a perishable property. And if you want something not to be perished, if it has a perishable property, right? So the mechanic for that is like, it expires and goes bad after a certain amount of time. You need to store it in a place that has insulation, because that's kind of our refrigeration thing. And, you know, if you want to have a fluid and you want to transport a fluid quickly across the station, you can build some conduits and then the fluid will move across the conduit. So the idea was that we want the player to be solving emergent problems based off of the properties of resources rather than solving designer induced problems based off of their spreadsheet, if that makes any sense. So the properties, as I mentioned, you know, solid, fluid, it can be inert or reactant, perishable or a contaminant, and so forth. And then if you walk through the matrix of, you know, the combinations, you end up with a list that we have, you know, so you can be like, well, this guy is, you know, it's a plasma. So it's, you know, both, you know, a contaminant and it's a fluid and so on and so forth. And then there's different hull options really when you build a module and different things you can put inside of the module that interact with these resource properties in different way. So then the player is solving an emergent problem that has like grounds in reality. So for example, you know, if there is a quarters and the quarter, you know, the quarters needs to have water to function, right? Because your crew quarters have to have water as one of their things. You know, and your water, maybe it's stored somewhere blowing. So you're like, I'm going to put all my water over here. Resource, you know, if this was a later version of the game, you could say I'm protecting it from, you know, my station being raided because I really care about my water. And then, you know, if you want it to get from point A to point B, well, then you build like a conduit network. But that also has its own problems because if your repair guy isn't fixing the conduits when they break, you know, you're going to be leaking water, you know, leaking water and leaking plasma and leaking coolant. Like these all have emergent things that happen, not because, you know, some designer coded it that way, but just because it's the physical properties of resources. So the resource game is built on top of that. The player is designing modules and then placing them using the resources. And then the maintenance, of course, you know, costs resources to maintain things, costs resources to burn fuel. So the resource and logistics game is kind of at the heart of the base building. The same way in which the personalities of the crew are kind of at the heart of like their own operation. And getting into like the logistics and management part of it, because personalities of the characters interact with jobs the same way in which they interact with everything. There's a lot of interesting decisions to be made about like maybe your station you know, only has a pile of jobs that nobody wants. The reason it has a pile of jobs that nobody wants is because you have like this very elaborate, you know, logistics supply chain of, you know, maintenance personnel and custodians, but, you know, nobody that you have recruited for your station, you know, really wants to do that work. And then it's, you know, is it a question of, well, you know, too bad, you're going to have to buck up and do it, or do we find someone else? Another facet of this is that the personalities evolve over time. So someone who starts out has a good experience, and someone who starts out loving his job can learn to hate it if, you know, things go terribly wrong. The same way in which you hate a job in real life, maybe you started to like it, but, you know, 6 months later, you found out you really hated that job. And then, you know, that has an effect on your life. You know, you're not sleeping well, you come into work late, you fail at your job, you know, the reactor catches on fire, and then, you know, the station explodes.
Oops.
That's kind of the the core game loop there.
Right. Well, it's probably a little early yet to talk about difficulty, but I'm extremely curious. And part of that is that, you know, I think with a lot of the strategy games and management games I played when I was younger had a very specific kind of difficulty curve, where expansion was kind of the goal, and it was kind of Gordon Gekko, greed is good, expand, get bigger. And stability was something that wasn't that hard to attain, at least in terms of it's not going to blow up immediately. But we've also seen a bunch of almost roguelike difficulty games like Oxygen Not Included, for example, where survival is very much not guaranteed and the game is very, very hard and you blow up a lot. So where exactly do you see Astro Base Command kind of falling?
Like on the between the builder kind of survival, like on that spectrum.
Right, like survival builder versus, you know...
City builder, say.
Yeah, city builder is a good one because those are usually pretty stable-ish.
It's really on a different spectrum than the spectrum you listed, because most of those games have a core gameplay mechanic where you're always having to grow something. So there's like a resource economy that's always expanding. You're progressing, and the game defines progression as getting bigger. That's true for all of the games that you mentioned. I mean, Astro Base Command, expansion is not part of the progression. You can expand if you want to because you happen to like the features of a large station, or you can keep it small if you want to keep it small. And the game doesn't make you feel bad for doing that. In so many games today, you know, you're like on a path. Yep. Like you start out, you have like one little town or something or whatever it is, and then like you get some resources and you make it bigger and you want to fill up the map. And then once you fill up the map, you want to fill in the map.
Yeah.
And then you want to level up all your things.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. And there's so achievements to unlock. Yeah. And then, you know, it's 4 a.m. I have to work tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a very Skinner box game design right. So there's little buttons that like as game designers who make it, if they're good, they'll have like every 30 minutes we need to, you know, ding the player with something so he feels like he has something. And, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, he feels like there's a big achievement every 2 hours. And then, right. So they lead you along with this breadcrumb. And that's just how games get made. So we're not on that spectrum. We don't want to sit in that pool. We want to do something completely different. And for us, it's not like build the station the size that you want to build it. It so happens that larger space stations have more features that you might find interesting. For example, if you have a large station and there's a lot of people on it, the death of one person probably isn't going to sink your operation. On the other hand, there's a lot more things to take care of. There's a lot more things that can go wrong. So really it's a question of like, what features do you want? And then are you willing to pay the risks for having them? And are you pay the risks for having them and stay with the smaller station, but then like you don't get the rewards of like more risky or not risky. It's entirely an emergent setup just based on, you know, how the station mechanics are designed and how the gameplay is designed. So it's up to you, build the station that you want to build. You know, it's not like it's easier or harder or any way. It's just that there's a different, you know, risk versus reward profile depending on the thing. So there's some things where a smaller station is better. There's some things where a larger station is better. And then play the game you want to play it. Like, we're not telling you as the makers of it that you have to do it this certain way, either implicitly or explicitly. Not to get off on a tangent, but most games have kind of a mainline path that either you're expected to do or the game kind of nudges you into doing it. And if you don't do things that way, you're playing a non-optimal game. And the dissonance that you have as a player is that it's like you want to play the game the way you want to play the game, but the game makes you feel bad for playing that way because you're not maximizing your reward set. So the example is this, that you know, when you're playing Civilization, the game wants you to expand your territory. You know, unless you're always building cities and expanding, you know, you're gonna you're going to lose, or you're going to be playing at a less optimal game, right? Like, what if you are the player who wants to play Civilization? You just want like a nice little five city setup. Well, you know, you're going to be penalized for not trying to take over the entire continent because the game mechanics are built in such a way. The number of cities that you have gives you a certain amount of bonuses, and those bonuses accumulate based on a curve. And it so happens, you could probably figure out, depending on the map size, there's an optimal number of cities mathematically that you can have that will maximize your income of your stuff versus whatever penalty that they have. And no matter kind of like where they draw that cross, it's still going to be somewhere, right? There's always like an optimal crossing of two curves. And the idea behind Astrobase Command was to sidestep this thing completely, where the game really has no concept of what's optimal or what's not optimal, because you're not getting currencies in the same way. You're not getting points, you're getting resources in the same way. That there's no, there's nothing like that that's being, you know, put on a curve to lead you in a certain direction. So that was kind of the idea behind it. That's why I said it's completely outside of this spectrum.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've talked a lot about the personality simulation through this whole interview, and obviously it sounds like it underpins a lot of the game as built so far. And we'd like to hear a little bit more about that, both in terms of how that system came to be and the thinking behind it, and maybe say one or two examples of the personality system impacting gameplay.
Yeah, so just to talk a bit about the personality system. So first of all, it's really the core of the game. And that one way to think about Astrobase Command is that it's a space station management game and crew simulator wrapped around a personality engine. And what that allows us to do is to make everything in the game tie into the personality engine. So two examples is that first, characters can interact with each other. You know, they'll have conversations and what have you, and then the results are based on how the personalities interact. So for example, the idea behind it is that conversations occur between two people. And what's really going on behind the scenes, like I'm talking about in real life here, what's really going on behind the scenes is that you have two personalities that are interacting in a very specific way based on their personalities. And the things that you say, the conversation, is really a representation of the personality interaction. So this is also true in Astrobase Command, where you know, their personality logic is driving all the things that's going on in their world. And then what you see as the player is really the front end for those interactions. So for example, if someone, you know, gets mad and punches a wall, for example, which isn't in yet, so don't look for it. But
oh man.
The example for that is that, well, what they'll do now is that they'll hate someone and become like enemies, and then they'll have like really negative interactions with each other. Like there's the whole spectrum of different ways relationships can be represented. So there's like professional relationships, you know, there's friendships and there's romantic relationships. So the example is that they go through their world with their personalities, and kind of everything that happens is the front end for that. So like if there's two people that hate each other, it's because they had a bunch of interactions, and those interactions made them not like each other because their personalities weren't lining up, you know, in a way that would have them like each other. Their personalities were lining up in the other way. And, you know, then, you know, they become enemies, and then like all the gameplay RPG stuff that happens when two people becomes enemies. The reason I brought up the punching the wall example was that it's something that's like totally obvious to do, but it like requires an animation. And, you know, we have to really be careful about where we're spending or how we're showcasing the personality system based on the resources that we have. the punching the wall example, it's totally set up to do. It's just you need an animation of someone punching the wall. And that's really the challenge for us right now, you know, as indie developers, is kind of like what's the best way to showcase a personality engine that can do anything. It's a generic personality system. You can do anything you want with it as a developer. So for us, it's the interactions and it's the job system where, you know, characters in the game have a relationship with their work, where they can like it or not like it, depending on, you know, basically what happens to them, what the job is, and what their personality is, right? Because it's all based on experiences. From the character's point of view, you know, their life unfolds, and they go through life making decisions based on what their personalities are, having interactions with other characters based on what their personalities are. And, you know, going to work and being like, I like my job, I hate my job, right? It's based on their personalities. So it's really driving everything that's in the game world. And you know, a cool bit about it is that their personalities will evolve over time based on those interactions. So everything that happens to a character in the game world is pushing or pulling on his personality in some way. And then it's called trait growth. It's kind of the internal system name for it. But we have mechanics in place where characters can learn from their experiences, right? Because we've written the personality system in such a way that the game has very perfect knowledge about everything that happens in the personality system, which is everything in the game. These are recorded for each character kind of in their memory. So, and the character remembers something. He remembers something in the language of the system, I guess I want to say. And then based on the experiences, you know, there are processes in his little brain to, you know, change his personality based on the things that happen to them. The same way, you know, you and me, you know, if you spent, you know, 6 months, you know, either going on some, you know, really awesome spiritual journey, or you spent 6 months, you know, hanging out with your friends, or you spent 6 months hating your job, or, you know, having a string of medical accidents. Like, these things affect your personality. These things affect who you are as a person, just the same way in which actions that are taken upon characters in the game change who they are as people. And it kind of really goes back to, like, the question of, like, what is a person? Because the first thing we wanted to answer when making ABC, right? You can say, oh, characters are people. Like, that's just three words. Anybody can say characters are people. But what the game is really an examination of, like, what that means, like what that actually means, both in our lives, and then trying to kind of filter that through the magic of art and creation, if you will, and put that into the game. And then build a world around it, because what use is having a personality if you don't have a world that pokes and pulls at that personality? Like, perhaps that's the reason, you know, we're here in our world, is because everything that happens to us pokes and pulls at our personalities, and then we change and we have experiences, and then, you know, we go through life as a series of experiences as it unfolds. I mean, it's the same is true for the characters in the game, really on a technical level, not on like a writery level. One of the distinctions that is useful to make in this circumstance is that for kind of the convention with RPGs, I don't know how familiar you are with the game development process, but for most RPGs, kind of everything's handwritten by a writer, and even the things that aren't handwritten by a writer are handwritten by a writer, in the sense that if you have a character in an RPG, and let's say that character has like a personality trait that's in the GUI, and it can be anything you want. Let's just say accusatory is the personality trait. So what does that mean? What does that mean in the game? Well, that doesn't mean anything, right? Because that's a writer who wrote that. And then other people who are also writers wrote quests that say, well, this person does this in this quest because he has this trait. Or, you know, or if the person has Give me a personality trait here. Give me a personality trait.
Argumentative. In the game.
Yeah. Argumentative, right. If someone has an argumentative personality trait in the game, what's really going on is that, they have like a little GUI icon, and then like maybe there's some quests, right? So if there's some quests, they fork the quest and they say, well, on this node, right, the argumentative guy goes down path A, and the guy that doesn't have argumentative go down path B. But then there's still writers that are like writing the thing. So the character has no concept of what it means to be argumentative. That's only in the mind of the player. It's not even in the game. All that's happening in the game is that the character hits a fork in a dialogue tree and goes left instead of right. And he doesn't know what it means to be accusatory. But in Astrobase Command, the way the AI is written is that the characters actually have an exception because that's what the entire game is designed around them doing. Even though it's not like, this isn't Google AI that we've written here. It isn't some super deep machine learning, but there's an emphasis on the entire world being built around context and meaning as an emergent property of things happening. So whatever happens in the game has a context and a meaning to it. And the characters know what that is. And then they emergently make decisions based on the things that happen to them. And then learn from those experiences, which feed back into their personalities and change their personalities in a very specific way, depending on exactly what happens to them, pushing and pulling their personality in the way one might humanly expect if you're just reading the names of it.
Well, awesome. I mean,
yeah,
the whole concept, the building of a world that you kind of get to affect from a position inside that world. I think that's definitely something underexplored in games and something we're both looking forward to getting to explore.
Yeah, I mean, partially because it is underexplored and it's just kind of a nifty idea.
I don't think we have time for any more questions, but if there's anything more that you would like to tell us about or would like to say, we've got a little bit of time for that, I think.
Well, ask me something that you guys want to hear the answer to.
What three games are you playing right now?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Besides, setting aside, your own, you of course end up kind of testing your own. But right now, what are you playing and loving?
Nothing.
Nothing.
No. So recently, I tried out Civ 6.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I had a friend. That we used to play these games and all of the time. And that was kind of our childhood, was playing these sorts of games together. And when I started working on Astrobase Command, like just like any kind of life project, you really have to optimize how you spend your time.
Right.
And one of the things that got cut out for me quite quickly was, putting 100 hours into an RPG.
Right.
Right. So like I kind of went cold turkey really up until quite recently, like last week. I said, okay, I'll try out this game with you and we'll play it.
All right.
Other than that, I spent 2 hours on a game called Rock, which is in beta, and I contributed to the development a little bit. So I checked that out.
Cool.
That was kind of cool. That's it. That's it.
All right.
Yeah, but
that's fair.
Life optimization is key for anyone who wants to do this sort of thing. Right. There's a lot of people who ask, how do I become a game developer, or what's some advice to someone who wants to be indie? There's enough hours in the day to do anything it is that you want to do as a human being, and really it's about like. Giving yourself the time to do it, because the time's there. It's just most people do things that waste their time.
Right.
And if your life, and this isn't my quote, this is a quote I read somewhere that I really kind of like, that, life is made up of time. So anything that wastes your time wastes your life is kind of the idea behind it.
Right. And actually one more sort of a follow on, related, one of those, hey, have you ever questions. So one of the RPGs from some years ago that I really enjoyed Because of kind of these nuanced systems that I think probably behind the scenes were just a bunch of if switches, was Alpha Protocol. And I was wondering if you had ever played that, because it's an interesting game from a mechanics and conversation and kind of trying to get at that personality thing. But a lot of the other mechanics really didn't live up to it, and it was buggy. But it was just another like random thought with all the discussion of personality.
Absolutely. I played that game, and it's exactly the triple A throw writers to make the solution answer.
Yeah, no, that was something that I thought. I think the one thing that impressed me about it was that while they had done kind of that classic, you know, triple A through writers thing, I was impressed that they had done so many different possibilities for you.
It was really I liked that game. I mean, I know it didn't get good reviews, but I felt it was really well done in a lot of different ways. And you're absolutely correct. Like this is really an industry issue where the cost of games have risen to these, like, you know, $500 million games, right? $1 billion games. And it's because you have, you know, hundreds of people working over 5 years to, you know, basically do this thing that we're talking about, except having the writer solution to it rather than the procedural solution to it.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly.
And the, I think the emergent solution has a lot of potential, and I think it makes for a more interesting game in the long run, just because you can never write all the options that you can generate.
No, and that got you to where I think Alpha Protocol got, where you just write it, and they had the guts to just bang away at all the options they wanted. But I think that hurt them in terms of some of the more conventional, straight up combat type gameplay mechanics and the bug testing. And that was why I think, or a bunch of the reason why I think it didn't get pull well in terms of reviews, which is sad. But hey, we'll see if we can do better with procedurals. We're really looking forward to Astro Base Command. So, you know.
Thank you. One more thing, if I'm...
Oh, go ahead.
So, the advice to players is kind of like, don't be fooled by dice rolls calling themselves procedural.
Right.
Because procedural is such a hot word these days. Kind of everyone's using it. And, you know, there's a joke that's like, you know, if you have a combat mechanic where, you know, you have a 50% chance of winning and 50% chance of losing, and it's just a dice roll. Well, that's a procedural system, because, you know, it's you have like the procedure of one or the other. And it's really at the point where, like, this is happening with the word systems, sandbox. This is happening with procedure. This is happening with AI. This is happening with all of these things. And it's becoming a scourge on the industry. So if there's anyone out there listening to this, you know, make sure you understand that words are just words, and anybody can use any words that they want, and there's no word police in games.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's it.
That's it. I do like your phrasing of, you know, the emergent world sort of thing, the emergent story and emergent gameplay. And I think that's that idea. I hope its time has come.
Yeah, it's a game that was really pushing us to get made, Astro Base Command.
Yeah.
Also, if you could plug our Kickstarter.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't worry, we'll have a link, and we'll...
Yeah, link in the show description.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for coming on. It was a great conversation.
Take care.
Yep, thank you guys. Take care.
And there he goes. As we said, the link to the Astro Base Command Kickstarter can be found in the show description. You can also, of course, just go to kickstarter.com and search for Astro Base Command, it being the only Astro Base Command currently looking for funding. And frankly, one of the most deserving Kickstarter games that I have seen in a long time. So we at the Crossbox heartily encourage you to go and support them. We would love to see Astro Base Command made. And actually, that's all we have for you tonight. I think for the first time in a long time, we here at the Crossbox can say that you did not waste an hour listening to our show. In fact, you got to listen to an interesting conversation about an interesting game. One we once again recommend that you go to Kickstarter and support. And I think that really wraps us up, I guess. The Crossbox Podcast is produced by my co-host John and me, Jay, and is brought to you by Many Words Press, online at manywords.press.
Our theme music is Royal Rumble by Jay Mann of OurMusicBox.com and is used under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution License. Special thanks to Dave Williams for coming on the show tonight. You can follow Jellyfish Games on Twitter at @jellyfish_games for news about Astro Base Command. You can keep up with us, on the other hand, the CrossFox contributors between podcasts at soapbox.manywords.press.